Game on 2FM.
With Gillette. Great performances begin with a comfortable close shave from Gillette. Gillette, making men's lives just that little bit easier.
Game on 2FM.
A massive thank you to Jenny Green. It's Thursday, the 14th of May, and this is Game On.
Coming up today, no action on the rugby pitch, but lots of transfer news off it. We'll be getting the thoughts of this guy.
It is Tommy Moe! Magic!
Oh, I love it. Just get giddy when I hear it. Inter County managers Terry Hyland and Mick Bone are also joining us, plus Jeff Shepherd on the US state that wants pro teams to move there.
Big news tonight, the governor making that message clear to any pro team. If you want to play, you're welcome to come on down to Florida. Governor.
Game on 2FM.
You can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM. Donica, it's Ruby's birthday today and he's not here.
I knew there was something we had to do. Did you send him a card, a cake? Did we get him anything?
I sent him a happy birthday Ruby message today.
Okay, there's one on the way, Ruby. Oops.
He didn't reply, it's fine.
Yeah, it's hard to celebrate birthdays at the moment. I don't think you'll get up to too much.
No.
Out in the tractor for a while, spin around the horses. Although that sounds like a great day to any seven-year-old.
They would absolutely love it.
He'd have a brilliant time.
Yeah, well, if anybody wants to send in a happy birthday text, Ruby, 51552, we'll pass them on.
How old is Ruby? Because he looks about 58.
Same age as you.
Is he?
41.
Jeez.
Yeah. Wow. There you go. What year were you born in then?
79.
So glad I was born in the 80s. Anyway, moving on. Any news today?
There's loads of news really, isn't there? We're starting to get out and about and see a little bit more. Bundesliga back this weekend, Marie. We spoke about it. We'll be previewing it tomorrow. Excited about it?
Yeah, I was dusting off the jerseys. Got a few of them at home. A few Dortmund ones and a couple of Bayern Munich ones. So I might put them on the lads and get one on myself and take a picture tomorrow.
Yeah. There was good news. The English captain, Harry Kane, has supported his old club, Leighton Orient. He's going to sponsor their shirts next season. And he's giving the space on the front. Of course, he couldn't put his own name, but he's giving it to three charities. So there's a children's hospice, the NHS Frontliners and a mental health hospital. It's kind of a good thing to see. You know, everyone goes on about why aren't the players helping out more? And here you see one that's, you know, maybe looking after his old club and giving exposure to three massive charities.
Yep, doing it in his own way. I remember a few years back, Paul McShane sponsored the jerseys of his old Gaelic football team, Newton GAA, Newtown GAA, and got loads of coverage for it. He had his name across them though, Paul McShane, if I remember correctly.
No way. Because I was thinking to myself, why is Harry Kane saying this? You know, like, would he not just be modest about it? But he's doing it for the charity and to create awareness for them, so he should be shouting it from the roofs.
And the thing, when somebody does something like that, what they're doing is fantastic, but also they always get a huge knock-on effect. So if somebody big gives a certain amount of money to a charity, the awareness and the coverage that comes from that always means that more people end up supporting it, and then they get lots more. So it's like when a celebrity or a famous person gets behind something. Donica, I'm sure you've done it a few times yourself.
Influencers.
Yeah. And then once they start getting a bit of coverage, then it puts the name of the charity out there. So
do you know who could start influencing a little bit more? Lewis Hamilton, Formula One driver, wealthiest sports star in 2020's Sunday Times Rich List. 35 years of age and his wealth has increased by 37 million. Fair play to him.
It's mad money, isn't it? When you said who could be influenced a bit more, I thought you were going to say Tommy Moe.
Well, funny you say it. Yeah, it has been. The rugby world has been mainly still on the pitch, but off it, it's been very busy with both Ulster and the Ospreys doing incredible work. And who better to ask by their favourite son, Tommy Moe. Tommy, how are we doing?
I know, I'm raging you said Lewis Hamilton. I thought you were going to mention me there.
No, Tommy, this is proper rich list. There is.
Yeah, I know.
And plus as well.
You're probably influencer style. I need anything I can get.
You'd have to sell a lot of pairs of shoes now to be racking up 37 million in 1 year.
Yeah, it's unbelievable, isn't it?
Yeah, you look at the top 10 there, it's all footballers and Anthony Joshua, and they're up around the 100 million mark.
McIlroy's there, is he not?
He is. Rory McIlroy is where? He's down the list a bit. Ooh, I can't find him. Is he over 30?
Yeah, he was 31 there a few weeks ago.
I'd be very surprised if he didn't make it. But anyway, yeah. That's some good reading later on.
Exactly. Tommy, good news for the Ospreys, and this was a worry for everyone, not only in Wales, but around kind of Celtic rugby. It has been always a stronghold, a major powerhouse, but Asian-based sports marketing group Y11's Sports and Media, they've got in behind them, and they're now taking a shareholding of 75%. Good news.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's pretty exciting. I think it shows the way rugby is going. Obviously, the Ospreys, there was a lot of speculation last year that they were going to have to merge with the Scarlets and Llanelli because there's just no money in West Wales. So to hear that an Asian backer has come in, a multi-million deal to buy the Ospreys, it's going to be going back to the Galactico days of just before I arrived.
Oh, there you go.
Before they spent all their money on you. Tommy, what's the expectation now on the club? Like, what should they achieve now that they have new backers?
Well, I think that, you know, they've signed Anscombe to come from the Cardiff Blues there. They've signed George North. I think, you know, my sister was on a couple of weeks ago on your show and she was chatting about with Esport Heath how they've done a lot of research and there is a probability or a possibility of there being a British and Irish league in a couple of years' time. There's the CVC money coming into the game. There could be a lot of big changes going on in the rugby setup in the next couple of years. And the way I see it, I think that maybe this backer has come in and sees an opportunity. A Welsh club is probably at a good value. And if they were to get into a British and Irish league or get into one of these big, wealthy European leagues, there could be a bit of money in it. So it's interesting times. Maybe they know something that we don't, but there could be an opportunity out there. And personally, as a former Ospreys player, they've been kind of on the decline for the last couple of years. So I'm delighted to see a bit of money go back in there and hopefully get themselves competitive because, you know, Ospreys in the past were one of the teams that used to be able to take on the likes of the Leinsters and Munsters and give them a good game. So hopefully we can get back to that.
Yeah, and you mentioned it there, and like you look at the quality of the players that are already there, and it can be hard from Tommy when they don't know are they actually going to have, you know, be a region next year. So a bit of stability for them now with the added power of being able to attract quality players.
Well, Matt, I mean, you remember it, Donica. You know, it's not even a year ago that those players, the likes of Alan Wynne Jones, George North, they were going into their club. They were with Wales at the time at the World Cup and they didn't know if they were going to be coming home to a club or not. Yeah. You know, there was a lot of speculation that was there even money there. So it gives them a bit of a solidity. It gives them a bit of excitement. And I think it's exciting for rugby going forward. The fact that an Asian power group has come in and invested in rugby in, I suppose, the Celtic nations is exciting. I can't see it happening in one of the Irish provinces, but you know, we want these matches to be competitive, and if that's what the Ospreys and the Welsh clubs need, then so be it.
Tommy, we're doing a lot of pontificating here on the show about what could potentially come down the track at the end of the COVID-19 pandemic and the potential that the rugby landscape might change. Do you think it'll change? Like, should there be changes made?
I think there's going to have to be changes in the medium to long term. I can't see anything happen immediately because obviously there's a lot of sponsorship and there's a lot of games still to be played out, but I think that the game of rugby, when you see the likes of what's happening in Australia, you know, how they're bust, there's a lot of clubs at the end of this COVID-19 in the likes of England, in France, could all be in serious financial difficulties as well. So I think that there is an opportunity now for us to hit the reset button and to try and create something that can create a bit more of a global game and something that's just going to take the game to another level. So, the English league is very exciting, the French league is very exciting, the Pro 14 teams are playing so well and so competitive in Europe. But with CVC coming in, they see that there's an opportunity there. And you would have to think that there is an exciting prospect in the future.
From a player's point of view, with just taking into account everything that has happened over the last few months, would you prefer to stay at home?
What do you mean?
Like, would you?
He never wanted to leave.
If you had a chance to move to France or to England, is it still as attractive? Just given everything that's happened, and now the fact that we know things aren't as stable as they were a few months ago.
Yeah, obviously taking a gamble to leave a club is always going to be tough. You know, I moved to the Ospreys when I was 24, and that was a huge gamble for me. You know, I was playing for week in, week out for Ulster at the time, but I couldn't get myself into the Ireland team. And I felt I needed to change something up. I needed to try and push myself to a new level. And the opportunity came to go to the Ospreys. And personally, it was the best decision I ever made. You know, I went to a club with, I think, the 13 players that played in the Welsh Grand Slam that season. So I knew it was going to be difficult, and I had to really up my game. So I think actually moving to a new club is exciting. I think it can, you know, it can work both ways, but sometimes taking that gamble can kind of push you out of the comfort zone that you're in. And I see a lot of players it would hugely benefit.
Yeah, Tommy, we're starting to see it now an awful lot more compared to when you moved. There's players moving to different provinces. But brilliant news for Ulster this weekend, holding on to two of their top players, Will Addison, Jordy Murphy, and then the added news, Ian Madigan coming in, Albie Matheson. It's good news for Ulster.
Yeah, Albie Matheson coming in. Obviously, from the Munster fans would be disappointed to see him going up north, but it's great to have him still playing in Ireland. And, of course, Ian Madigan coming back from Bristol. So some good moves there from Ulster, and it's exciting for them. They're really just trying to build some strength and depth. You'd think that Matheson would still be behind the likes of John Cooney, and whether Madigan can force his way into the starting 15 at 12, maybe, you know, with Stuart McCluskey, I doubt that, maybe ahead of Billy Burns at 10. So, yeah, it's about building that strength and depth. Ulster are trying to build that so they have a squad that can take on the likes of the Leinsters and maybe Munster. So, you know, I think even the news that Roman Salamoa is moving from Leinster down to Munster is a huge signing as well. You know, we've gone down to watch a lot of Munster games over the last year or two, Donegal, and the front row is an area that really, if Munster can shore that up, they'll be a team to be reckoned with. So he's a really exciting prospect as well. And it's tough for Leinster losing another academy prospect, Jack Anger, going across to Connacht too. But I think for these guys, they need to take the opportunity. You know, there's only so long you can sit behind all the guys in front of you. Like, those guys will be fourth, fifth, sixth choice in Leinster. So they have to try and test themselves.
There's a lot of talk about Salanoa. What is it about him that's so special and that makes him be so in demand?
I think he's just got raw, natural ability. You know, we've seen him come off the bench. We've seen him play a few times for Leinster. And, you know, when you're behind the likes of a Tadhg Furlong, you know, you're going to learn stuff off him. And somebody who has that natural ability, that strength, you know, he's going to be a force to be reckoned with. And I know Leinster would be very disappointed to let him go. They really saw him as a prospect for the future. So for him to turn down another, maybe a development deal with Leinster to go down to Munster, it's a big tip of the cap to the likes of Stephen Larkham and Johan Van Gansetraen, or maybe even Graham Rowntree. Donica, you know Graham Rowntree, you know, in terms of a young guy who wants to learn, there's no better man than Rowntree to try and teach you.
Yeah, absolutely. We're seeing it a lot more, though, Tommy, as well. Your mate, my mate, Murray Kinsella, is reporting that Sammy Arnold and Conor Oliver could be on their way to Connacht.
Yeah, two guys, again, who've had limited game time this year. And this is what we're seeing in a lot of the provinces, particularly Munster and Leinster, that they have a backlog of players who are coming through the ranks and they're not getting game time. You know, Sammy Arnold is capped for Ireland. Joe Schmidt capped him a couple of years ago. He left Ulster when he was only 20 and has been a huge prospect. But again, he's been third, fourth choice in the Leinster centre partnership. So for him to just get game time, you know, you think back whenever you were 20, 21, 22, 23, you wanted to play week in, week out. And it must be so frustrating for these guys having to play one game every month, every 2 months. So I'm excited to see Sammy Arnold. He's a really, really physical, abrasive player, so he'll add an awful lot to the Connacht backline. And the back row as well, you know, exciting as well. He's former Blackrock College. A lot of talk about him, see how he goes.
Tommy, if you were in that situation, I know you moved to Ospreys, all right, but if you didn't have that option and you had to have moved to another province at that time in your career, where would you have went?
The question of the week. Yes, about time.
You know, you're next, Donegal.
Well, when I was coming back from the Ospreys, I didn't actually know whether I was going to be able to come back to Ulster. And, you know, I did actually speak to Leinster and Munster, and It would have been a tough one for me to move, to be honest with you. But because you've got Dunnick on the show, I'd have to go down and maybe join himself and some Arthur Leary for a bit of crack. Anyway,
Dunnick, where would you have moved?
I couldn't.
You would have just retired.
Yeah, exactly. That's why we ended up over with Worcester. So
Munster were the only team that played nice slow rugby for Dunnicky. Sooner than perfect.
You're not wrong. It's all changing now as well, Tommy. We've seen the EPCR are saying that next year's European Cup, they could look at different ways, but maybe 24 clubs in the Heineken Cup or Champions Cup. What do you think of that?
Wow.
For me, I don't know about it. I like the way that it is. It's hard to get into, but I can see it from the English and the French point of view that Toulouse don't want to be out of top flight rugby.
Yeah, I understand that. I mean, it's bringing so many clubs into it seems a bit farcical to me. You know, if you watched it last season, once one of the French or the English clubs lost a few games, they lost interest in it completely and they just started bringing out second tier teams. So for them to bring in more teams, and then if they're not going to make it, they're just going to concentrate in their own league. So I think I wouldn't be a big fan of that, to be honest with you. I'd be interested to see what way it goes. I haven't read too much about that, but the European Cup, it's got such a history, such a tradition, but unfortunately with the relegation and stuff in the English and the French league, unless they're really vying to make the quarterfinals and semifinals, they're not really that interested in it. So if maybe they think the way to solve that's put more teams in it, I would have thought it would be the opposite way, personally.
Yeah. How's COVID life with newborn, Jamie? How's he doing?
It's like feeding time at the zoo here at the minute. I've just managed to come upstairs and now it's bath time. So chaos here at the minute. Daddy daycare is not my forte.
How old is he?
He is 10 weeks on Saturday, which means I've been on lockdown for 10 weeks. but it's just, I'm pretty much man-marking the three-year-old girl, Emma, and I've never heard someone talk so much. I mean, I thought you were bad. She just follows me. There's only so much dressing up as a princess and getting my nails painted and putting ponytails on her dollies that you can do. But anyway...
Dunnick can give you lots of tips. Lots of tips on that.
Welcome to my world. If you ever want to chat about the My Little Ponies, I'm here for you.
Oh, it's mad. It is mad. But I think the first couple of weeks, I find it very difficult to try and just kick back and be in the house all the time. But we're kind of into a bit of a routine now. So I'm enjoying it, making the most out of it.
So you will be looking forward to rugby getting back then. And according to Donal Lenihan in the Irish Examiner, they are targeting a June the 1st as a possible return date for training, which would be something anyway, Tommy.
Yeah, I read that. I'd be surprised if we're back by June the 1st for training. I would have thought it could be a month or so after that. But listen, if it's June the 1st, I'd be delighted. That'd be brilliant because I am missing sport. I'm missing being pitch side, on the TV with it. But I just miss watching it. I miss, having something to put the feet up and watch at the weekends and add that bit of excitement. So the sooner it gets back, the better. Obviously, health and all that is very much at the forefront of what has to go on and everything that all the precautions and everything like that are most important. But, it'd be great just to try and get a bit of sport back on at some stage.
Tommy, some people have used the time to mend, mend the bridges and put things back together. There's a bit of harmony between Finn Russell and Gregor Townsend, two of the Scottish lads. That wouldn't that be some crack being in that camp when they eventually do get back together?
Have they been living together, have they?
Isolating. There surely is a kiss and makeup.
Surely a Zoom chat here and there isn't going to mean they're fully made up. I think Finn Russell, such a talent, such a quality player. It'd be foolish now for Gregor Townsend not to try and do what he can to try and get him back into the team. But Dunnick, yourself, if you're a head coach, you have to kind of lay down a mark or two. So it's kind of it's a double-edged sword, that one. But for Scotland going forward, they need Finn Russell in that team. They just need him.
Yeah, absolutely. Tommy, as always, thanks so much for joining us. Look after the family and we'll chat to you soon.
Okay, guys. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Bath time. 2FM. Game on.
on 2FM with Gillette. When we show our best side, we don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters. Game on 2FM.
Welcome back to Game On. Donika, you haven't mentioned the podcast in a while.
It's very true. The podcast. If you'd like to listen back to hear the brilliant Tommy Bow, you can catch us wherever you get your podcast. Perfect company if you're heading out for a stroll, an evening walk, a run. We said clearing out the hot press, but, you know, 40, 50 minutes apiece.
Leave whatever
myself,
you're at.
Marie and Ruby, help you out.
So I was having a look at some of the details that Donal Lennon had, and he has quite a lot in these pieces. And he was saying that Munster planned to become self-sufficient and carry out all their training and preparation in isolation at Thomond Park. And they'll be in mini groups of four with no players in the same position, placed in the same pod. And they'll do weights, fitness work before building up to whatever kind of contact they can do in time. What do you reckon?
Yeah, I think that's all possible. I know with other sports you might be able to get straight back out there, but with rugby it's not like that. You actually need to slowly battle harden your body, you know. And what happens with rugby players is you start travelling a little bit higher until you get ready to arrive in certain positions. So that's where you tend to pick up injuries. And to, you know, we Tig Furlong on, which you can listen back on the podcast. But for him to go straight back into a massive game against Saracens, that would be wrong. So you have to build up into it. I like the idea of an interpro, and you know, Munster have left their facilities out, you know, to help with the coronavirus. So they can self-contain in Thomond Park. So I think it'd be good use of it. You'd be interesting to see who you get in your three or four, though. If you got three of the lads that you couldn't get on with or didn't like, it'd be hellish, wouldn't it?
It would be hellish, yeah. You wouldn't like that. So you'd be happy enough with an Interpro. Viva Stadium director Martin Murphy came out today and he said they're ready to host games behind closed doors. So there are venues there.
I would love an Interpro and it would be the perfect place for it. I think we can take our lead from New Zealand and that's exactly what they're doing. But let's see who the best in Ireland is. It'd be brilliant if different things, I know it's very hard to put it together, but if Europe mattered, if you could make Europe with the looks of it, anyone could make Europe with 24 teams, though, at the moment. We'll have Clan William in there if they were going well. So it's just, look, I think we all want to see sport, but I think, you know, behind the scenes, and in Donald Lennon's brilliant article, he's outlined them that, you know, I think we could see rugby much sooner than people think.
Yeah, well, I'd say there'd definitely be a few TV companies interested in showing the Interpros as well. So
if only there was a presenter like Tommy Bow ready to go.
Very good. Now, moving to Gaelic Games. The season is still up in the air. We're trying to figure out what's going to happen next. And to discuss this, we are joined by Dublin Ladies Football manager Mick Bowen. Mick, how are things?
Pretty good, Marie. How are you? All right?
Oh, we're all good now, I have to say. Donica's nodding away there.
Yeah, sorry, Mick. How are you?
Hi, Donica. Nice talking to you. How are you? All right?
Likewise.
Donica, Mick can't see you.
Sorry, I'm still getting down with the radio, Mick. Sometimes I nod and I showed something to the microphone one evening. Marie was getting a giggle out of me.
Very good.
So, Mick, how have you been? What have you been doing to keep busy during the last few weeks? Because I know you're always on the go. You're so active. If you're not coaching the Dublin Ladies football team, you're training the girls, your own girls. So I'd say it's been a bit of an adjustment.
It has, yeah. In one fell swoop, every coach that was involved in between my day job and then the evening activities were, I suppose, taken away. So most unusual. I probably never found myself in this position before, like lots of people. There was probably a novelty factor at the start, which has certainly worn off at this stage.
I think we'll all agree with that.
I think everyone can identify with that. But it's difficult. It's become difficult now because, you know, obviously sport plays a role away from the enjoyment of participation, but probably the problems that it relieves for lots of people, you know, it's their outlet, it's their escapism for periods of time, and that's all gone at the moment. So, and equally, I think for coaches, you need a team in order to be able to coach. And when you've no team, I suppose, for the first time in our lives, we probably appreciated hugely the fact that of having the having teams available to you to pursue your hobbies or your pastimes or your passion, whatever it is. So there are factors at the moment that are, I suppose, difficult for lots of people to deal with.
And for someone like you, Mick, as well, like we know from following your career that you are a very hands-on coach, like you like to direct and just improve players in their skills. So that must be quite challenging when you just don't have that access.
Well, I have to say, this Zoom thing is cracking me up. You just do not get a feel for the players in front of you. And all those things like the situation when you're coaching a team and you engage the mood of the group, or, you know, whether it's time for a little bit of hardship or a little bit of fun or whatever it is. And all those things like trying, you know, when you're trying to do a little bit of work across the internet with people and try and help them, it's just not the same. So, look, it's the cards we've been dealt at the moment. I suppose last weekend was probably a difficult one for us in that we probably heard from the association that that this year's championship was very much in doubt as regards whether anything would take place. I think John Horan made that very clear to us.
Mick, it's so interesting to hear you say that, because everyone's trying to get by and maybe Zoom is the best way to do it at the moment. But for you as a coach, even just seeing your players, like, you can cycle training, but being able to give honest feedback, you know, and seeing improvements, it must be very difficult.
Yeah, and I think the biggest thing that I suppose that I felt over the last 6 weeks, you know, I've asked myself the question, like, what you're involved in the initial stages of it all. And it's that personal touch, you know, people, it's a little bit like lads saying to you at the moment, it's not the pub I miss, it's the interaction, you know, during or after games. So that's the same thing with coaching a team. What are you involved for? It's not just the game itself, it's the interaction with people. It's that enjoyment that you'd get from seeing a player develop a skill or solve a problem or whatever it is. You know, they're all key issues that are just, they're voids at the moment. And no computer, no amount of phone calls can you know, make up for that look or hand on the shoulder or whatever it is that interaction with a player. So that's missing, yeah.
And Mick, that being missing, that's the bit that builds the bond, isn't it? You know, that interaction that, you know, I know everyone's working on the fitness, but someone pulling you through a difficult session on a tough day, that's what championship days are made of.
Key things, and you know, that development of a relationship with a player, all those things. And it's fine, you know, checking in with someone through a phone call or a text or whatever else. And that during the course of the year, on top of all the other stuff, is great. But it's certainly at the moment, I see it as a massive void. And you don't gauge the mood of the player the same way. You obviously pick up from their body language, all those things when you're involved in coaching. And you can just, you know, you tip it on to someone else to say, you might take a few minutes with them tonight and see what's going on, or yourself, or whatever way it is. So all those things are human. Obviously, it's so important to us all. It's certainly missing. I definitely know from our own group, from those players, and they're in every single outfit, who struggle a little bit of anxiety or otherwise, that this is a really difficult time for them, because that camaraderie of the group is missing. You know, the obviously the endorphins that we release ourselves from exercise, but it's not just doing exercise on your own. It's from the adrenaline that comes from a training session going well or otherwise. They're all, you know, massive factors that have gone just taken away overnight, and it's a really strange one to deal with.
And Mick, like, you're still the manager of that team, so the fact that you're aware of that, and you know that not everybody's going to be having their good days every day, does that kind of put a little bit of extra responsibility and pressure on you, because you need to be wary of what's going on with how people are feeling?
Yeah, and that's one of the decisions we made a couple of weeks back when all of this was up in the air, whether the season goes ahead or it doesn't go ahead, that it was going to be really important for us to stay in touch in some capacity with the group. And even at the moment, we're trying to figure out what that should be, whether it's trying to give challenges or triathlons or otherwise, just to keep people active in some form. Because I think the carrot dangling towards what has been suggested as an October championship is a really difficult one, and the possibility of club action taking place in the middle of July. But it's just so ambiguous at the moment, because realistically, you know, it's been said in some quarters, without a vaccine there'll be no games. And then, I mean, when you look in the history of vaccines, and you know, I think the earliest one took place, or that is that we have come up with, has been a 4-year one or a 3.5-year one. So you struggle to see if there's an answer in the short term for all of this. But still, mental health, like, so there's a key onus on us to try and keep people well in some form, that you just can't let them off. But then you've added up, you know, as some players love a structure, other players are really good with a little bit of freedom and are very, very self-disciplined. So it's a really difficult balancing act at the minute.
Like you mentioned there, the no vaccine, no games issue that has cropped up quite a bit. And with GAA pitches being closed now until for another few months until July, and with John Horan saying no games while social distancing measures are in place, it's very hard to see a way back from that.
Very difficult. And the other one, which was, I can understand the reasoning behind it, but at the same time, I have to say I was disappointed, is the whole closure of the GAA grounds. And I know, I understand, like, it must be difficult in some areas to police it or to you know, be mindful and to keep social distancing in action. But at the same time, when you think of communities around the country, that's their outlet, their own. Like, I certainly know in parts of the country whereby the only piece of flat ground is your local club and the gates are closed. And that's difficult because, you know, a couple of lads going out pucking a ball or a couple of girls going kicking a football, whatever it is, just the release, the mental release. Someone else gets it by getting on a bike and going for a spin, or someone else gets it by getting in a kayak. But this is what these have been, you know, essentially born to do, is to kick a football or hit a schlitter or whatever it's going to be. And then the access is taken away. I find that quite difficult to deal with now at the moment, from the point of view that, you know, during previous times, whether it was, you know, civil wars or whatever it was, our grounds were open because that was people's opportunity to just release the pressures of it all. And at the moment, like going out into a public park and you think someone takes out a camera and they put it up on social media, and it's almost frowned upon. When you think, like, from somebody's mental health point of view, this is actually really important for them.
Yeah, and there has been growing calls, all right, to try and get some GAA pitches open a little bit sooner, because as you mentioned there, especially in rural places, for some people, that's all they have. Look, we're expecting a different format of a ladies football championship if it does come back. Mick, what would you like to see?
If it comes back, realistically, you know, they either do it in smaller groups or they do it as a straight knockout. But I'm betwixt and between on it, Marie, to be honest, because at the end of the day, you know, our games were set up as a social outlet for people. For the sake of just running a competition and have a one-off game and you're gone out of the competition, I'm not quite sure the benefit of that, particularly when there'll be no run into it, there'll be no challenge games, there'll be no, you know, sub-competition or whatever. So I'm hugely concerned if it goes to October, like the lads is due to go, all of a sudden you're looking for a scramble for pitches, for floodlit grounds, the weather turns a little bit bad, and all of a sudden, you know, we find ourselves in all kinds of difficulty. And I'd hate to see the competition just put on for the sake of running it, just to have a couple of games. I don't see a real benefit in that. My opinion would be to kick for touch altogether until a new season, if that's the case. And obviously, that's not, you know, deep down in any of us, that's not what we want. But either the competition is run properly over a sustained period of time where people get an opportunity really to play, because, you know, once you put on that jersey, like, there's an onus of responsibility on you to go out and perform. So you just don't want to go out and just play a game for the sake of it. You want to actually go out and put on an exhibition.
When do you think that call should be made then, Mick?
I think it should be made, and I've said this to people in the LGFA, I think that call should be made very early, because genuinely there's a pressure on players over this period. They're trying to do stuff on their own. As of Monday, you know, essentially the government say you can go out in groups of four, but the association is saying that they don't want people to train. So, that you know, obviously that's there's a variance in that. And you don't want a situation where people feel you're not contributing back to your community or you're putting people at risk, because that's not what you want to be associated with. But I certainly feel dragging this out over the course of the summer and, you know, an uncertainty as regards whether there'll be a competition or not, I don't think that's a healthy situation for the players. So I feel the sooner the better they either make a decision there's going to be a competition or there's not going to be one. That's as simple as that.
And do you have a plan yourself for the girls, how long you plan to keep them going as they are?
So we had kept them going over a period of whatever, 5 weeks, and then we took a break over the last 10 days with a view to returning next week. And now I suppose we're waiting for an announcement from the LGFA, which is due to take place this week, because they did a survey amongst their members, and which is a really interesting one, because at the end of the day, we can all decide whatever we want, but if players decide themselves they feel it's unsafe to play or to go back into the family unit, you know, I certainly know one family who's got they've a sibling who's cystic fibrosis, and they wouldn't be prepared to go back into that household and endanger one of their family members, and which is fully understandable. So if we have a percentage of our players who are unwilling to take that risk, well, for me, then the whole thing is gone.
And Mick, what's the communication been like between you and the LGFA, between the teams and the counties and the LGFA, just given everything that you've outlined and the situation that you find yourself in and the worries that you have about the future?
In fairness to them, they did a survey of their of inter-county managers, captains, clubs and county boards last weekend. And the findings of that haven't been released yet, which is obviously what we're waiting for. And I suppose even within our own setup at the moment, we're trying to gauge from our own group what they feel, even if it was a situation that they say return to club July 20th. Like, what's best for them for this period? Because as I said a couple of minutes ago, you know, why do we get involved in this in the first place? So that whole enjoyment factor, it's, you know, it's not a situation where you just want to keep people training away for the sake of training. There has to be a purpose to it. So, you know, that announcement from the LGFA will be important this week, and then I'd be really interested in the findings of the players themselves. If the players themselves, or if there's a percentage, I think in the GPA there was it something close to 20% who weren't willing to return without a vaccine. And if that's the case, I think we're fairly much goosed on this one.
And Mick, just finally before we let you go, what do you think is best?
It hurts me to say it, because it's the elephant in the room, but I can't see within the professional setup, if you were to, you know, if everyone was kept within a safe environment and they weren't been released from that, I think that's feasible. I don't think our games were set up for that. We certainly don't have the finances capable of carrying that out. Nor do we have the endorsements that are worth it from a point of view of promotions and finance and sponsorship. So for me, I think the brave call at this stage, unless a vaccine is to be found, which I know people are saying about the finance that has gone into it, but still, the, you know, the steps that are need to be taken on that between finding it and getting it endorsed and whatever else are just going to be certainly beyond the time scale that we have to play with. So in my opinion, it doesn't sit well with me even saying it, but I think from a point of release of pressure on everybody that this thing has to go for 2020.
Okay, Mick Bone, Dublin Ladies Football Manager, thanks so much for joining us.
Game on 2FM with Gillette. When we show our best side, we don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters. Game on 2FM.
Welcome back to Game On. Marie, I found Mick Bowen incredibly interesting there. Really came off the fence in what he fielded on things like the facilities, but just for a coach, a bonus store, a manager, someone you'd want to play for.
Yeah, like the points that he made about why you're doing it. And do you know what? You kind of nearly forget that. And why are they doing it? And why are people giving all this time and playing? And it's for the camaraderie, the fun. Okay, obviously going after All Ireland is brilliant too, but there's so much more to it. So...
It's unfair. Like we even found it with big training stints. If you didn't actually give guys a blowout to actually play a match, there would always be rows in training or stuff. So everyone's been kind of, you know, getting physically stronger and better. But you actually do. You need to play your sport, and I think it's interesting to hear them see it, and especially you can see why they've won three in a row.
Yeah, and also like. They're the All-Ireland champions as well, so that doesn't make it easy for him to say that when you think the players that they have and the form and everything. It's not easy.
But they'd want competition. It's interesting he's saying they're thinking of doing, triathlons and stuff like that. But that's the type of group he has. Whereas, you know, I found the most interesting thing was about the facilities, not being able to get down and just whatever about being outside, but just mental health.
Yeah, there's a lot to it. Now, staying with the GAA, this time we are going to touch a little bit on the fundraising, specifically Sláinte 2020, a fund that has been set up to assist those facing financial difficulties in America during COVID-19. And I'm delighted to say we are joined on the line by Terry Hyland, the manager of the Leitrim Footballers, and he's going to tell us a little bit more about Sláinte 2020. Terry, how are things?
Very good, Marie, and you?
Actually, we're great here now, thankfully. Before we get on to Sláinte 2020, I don't know if you heard Mick Bowen there, Terry, and he was just kind of outlining some reasons why he thinks that it might be better just to call the ladies' football season this year. For someone that's involved in management, what do you think?
I would agree with him totally. I think you need to draw a line in the sand. I think that you can't keep pushing the boat back out and players' expectations. And to be fair, I think Mick and every manager is the same question he gets is, what do you think? What do you think? When? And nobody can answer that, unfortunately, because it's circumstances outside everybody's control, and we have to go by what the medical people say and the government say. And I go back exactly, unless we have an antiviral or we have a vaccine, I can't see how it's going to happen. And we have two words that we use. I says social distancing. Once those words have been used, I can't see contact sports being played.
And how do you think the players would feel about this? You have a direct line to them.
Well, players want to play, young people want to participate. Young people probably don't understand as much as older people. And I'm at a different stage than even a lot of guys that managing teams is that, you know, I'm in the latter stages of being involved in management. And I've seen a lot and I've, you know, different times and different things. And there is circumstances when you can do some things and there's times you can't do things. And I think we have to accept these are times that we can't do it and that we have to get on with it. And where our sport plays a massive part in all our lives, there's bigger pictures out there and bigger stories that we have to look at.
Terry, when you just judging by your players, obviously at the start of lockdown, you would have been training and following Zoom sessions. How are they now? How's the mood within your camp? Is it starting to fade off, the novelty factor? Is there competition?
Well, to be fair, we give them a break at the start of May. I said, look, lads, take 2 weeks out. Let's see where this is going, because I think they needed to freshen up mentally as well as everything else. And, okay, a lot of lads are out of work and they're at home and they're looking for something to do and are eager and we can give them programmes. But we collectively, we want to let lads off. And the most important thing to me in any sport is your skills. And it's very hard to do skills work possibly on your own when you haven't got competition. Lads can go out and do certain levels and they can still do that. You still can kick the ball up at the end of the house and catch it coming back and go out and practice shooting with to make up goals in your lawn or whatever it is. And the skills bit is, to me, they can walk away and hone on. And, you know, I remember back in the day when you were a club footballer and you went out, your training session was 3 laps of the field and you played football. And, you know, perhaps we need to come back a little bit from the physical side and just look at the skill side. And when the skills levels everything out, in the end of the day, I know, Donica, you said about guys build up in the gym and the pump iron and their testosterone levels are high and they want to get out and blow that steam off. But perhaps maybe it is an opportunity to look at the skill side.
Yeah, absolutely. Terry, can you tell us a bit about Sláinte 2020? Obviously, you know, everyone's seen what's the outreach of the GAA has been incredible, helping each other out, and this is another case of it.
Well, that's true, and, you know, the GAA is only one arm of what these people are trying to do out in New York. And to be fair, look, they are our own. These are Irish people who are caught in the mail from in New York and Boston and Chicago and all over the States. It's not just Launches. Launches just happened to be probably the New York end of it. But these are people with Irish passports who were caught abroad, maybe worked in food industry, bar trade or construction, and suddenly find themselves out of work. But rents to pay, kids to look after, all that sort of stuff that we all have here, but no backup from a government who's going to say, well, look, at there is a COVID payment of 350 or whatever is available to you. So they've been digging in at their savings. Some of them would have no savings. So to be fair, the group in New York come up with the slant 2020 slogan, and they have a wonderful saying in it. They say there's no strength without unity. And we all know that. It's in team sports, it's the same in everything else. If you're unified, you will pull it across the line. And I think their aim is to harness the collective reach of all well-known Irish organisations, and that includes the GAA. I know yesterday they would have spoke to the government as well to see if they can extract funds. And the government has already given some funding, but they need much, much more. And I think there is a great potential there for Ireland to have hand back the opposite way across the sea. Normally, we Irish go to New York or America to bring funds this way. Now we have an opportunity to look after our own over there.
The connection with the GAA in New York especially is so strong, Terry, isn't it?
It's very, very strong. And, you know, I've been there, and maybe not in a leading capacity, but I've been over fundraising with Cavan, and you're met with open. And once you're Irish, everybody opens the door. It doesn't matter what county you're from. And I know Leitrim has a strong allegiance through the Connacht Championship, and all the counties in Connacht would have that. And, you know, it's like a bank holiday when the first round of the championship has been played over there in with New York and whatever kind of county. And you've seen it last year, Marty and Times Square with Mayo, and it thronged with Irish people. That's how strong it is that, you know, they can take over New York on any given day with the amount of Irish is there.
Yeah. Terry, thanks so much. We'll tweet out all the details for Slaughter 20. Thanks for joining us on Game On.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Terry.
Game on 2FM with Gillette. When we show our best side, we don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters. Game on 2FM.
Netflix popular documentary The Last Dance has been drip-feeding our massive sporting hunger over the last 4 weeks. To cast his expert eye over it, we're delighted to be joined by Jeff Shepherd. Jeff, how are you?
I'm doing great, Danners. How are y'all today?
We're good, we're good. Jeff, the Michael Jordan documentary has been incredible, but it's only been a precursor for what's to come. It was great to see today the US World Cup winning women's soccer team are about to have their own show.
Yeah. So they announced there's going to be a documentary done on the 1999 women's World Cup team, which, I mean, really, you know, for all intents and purposes, I mean, just did an unbelievable job to infuse, you know, kind of America with, like, you know, I guess probably its largest ever, you know, dose of soccer frenzy, really. I mean, in 94, we hosted the World Cup, but still not a lot of people really kind of knew what was going on and understood it. So, you know, since the 99 games, I mean, you know, you've had these 2 decades now since then that have had these two kind of big events, the U.S. hosting the Men's World Cup in 94 and then the women winning it in 1999. And so you just had, you know, 2 generations of kids now almost growing up as soccer fans in America. And they just really captured kind of the spirit of, you know, just sport and, you know, did a great job to just kick down the door, you know, for women's athletics across the country. They were phenomenal. You know, Mia Hamm and Julie Foudy and Brandi Chastain, of course, with the, you know, the iconic goal celebration in the PK match over with the PK kick over China. So it's great. I mean, a lot of those women have not really kind of left the spotlight. Julie Foudy and Mia Hamm, you know, they've been commentators for men's matches for years now. And Brandi Chastain, you still see her, you know, pop up every once in a while. But it'll be great to kind of see, you know, that team and what it meant for sports and specifically women's sports in America, you know, 20 years ago.
Shep, I was in America that summer. I played in the USA Cup in Minnesota. So I was there for 4 weeks and it was the best time. And I just think it, whatever the feeling that was in the country at the time and the way it captured the imagination of the people, I just couldn't believe how popular the sport was there.
Well, and that's the thing that sports can still do. No matter what goes on when it comes to politics and not any of the other stuff in the world, I mean, if your team's going to the Super Bowl, the city's going to be united and there's not going to be any crime going on for a couple of days. You know, I mean, it's just one of those things. And yeah, I mean, at that point, you know, the summer of 1999, you know, we were we were all worried about Y2K and if the world was going to end in a couple of months and all this other crap that, you know, never really panned out. And, you know, you're coming up to this new decade, it's the 2000s, but then you had this women's team, you know, they're made up from people all over the country, and they were winning, and, you know, they were taking on the Chinese and all that stuff back then, and they were just making us proud. And you're right. I mean, everybody, I remember it. I mean, it was must-watch television. And from what I remember, I believe, you know, the finals are usually somewhere around July 4th or around that date, you know, the Independence Day. So it was just, like you said, it was just everywhere. It was all over the place.
You've brought us back there with Y2K. But we all remember Ray Houghton's goal in Ireland. Everyone remembers where they were. For that penalty kick, where were you?
And we were at the beach when they played that match. I was just thinking about it this morning. It was my mom and my brother and I, and we were on a vacation. And we, you know, basically, you know, scheduled that day around the match so we could watch it and be inside. And, you know, I remember just everybody going back out after it was over, and it was just what everybody was talking about. I mean, it really was a moment, you know, and then, of course, made iconic by the celebration and everything that happened after that. But at the time, I mean, it's what everybody was talking about. And even if you didn't know anything about soccer, and in 1999, there were a ton of Americans who still didn't know a lot about soccer, you were still talking about it then.
Yeah. Shep, as always, thanks so much for joining us in Game On. We'll catch up next week.
Appreciate it, guys. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Shep. Donegal, we've had a text in. Big 21st birthday shout out to Niall Murphy in Brittas Bay. He's a big Newcastle supporter. And he received a birthday message from Alan Shearer. Best present ever.
Oh, wow. And we've another one in here. My husband listens to the podcast every day in Cyprus, where he is working out there with the UN. Fair play to him. Congrats.
We didn't get all your name. Podcast plugging is working.
There you go. Okay, that's it. Tara Stewart's up next. Thanks for joining us. We're back tomorrow night at 6.
And we'll have Neil McManus and some other guests as well.
Oh, yes.
Live across the nation, this is RTE 2FM.